Good morning, good morning, good morning. And thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have an interesting show for you today. I was speaking with the guests backstage, and already I know it's going to be a lot of fun. But we can't just jump into it. We can't just start the show. We have to find someone who needs to watch this show too. So, like always, I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. Find someone somewhere, maybe they're eating their breakfast, talking on the phone, sleeping peacefully. Disturb whatever they're doing, because just like if a fire was going on or something was happening, they would want to know. And this information is just like that. So wake them up, shake them up, whatever you have to do, but let them know the Roundtable Talk Show is live, because friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So while you're doing that, I'm going to go ahead and introduce today's guest, Miss Prisca Diaz. Prisca Diaz is founder and CEO of Bitty Lab, an inventor of the Bear Air-Free technology. As an immigrant woman, she wanted more than what life had for her. She worked two, sometimes three jobs to make a living while learning English, going to college, and eventually graduating with a master's degree. Good morning, Prisca. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. Thank you so much for inviting me to the show. I'm so glad to be here. Yeah, I wanted to attend because one of the things that I want to tell the listeners is about my newest venture, which is actually not so new. I started a business and startup in 2010, and it's about saving babies. Babies who have gastroesophageal reflux, gas, colic, spit up, all that things, all those symptoms that usually come for babies. Well, I'm here to tell you that it's not normal and I can help. And my product has been clinically proven to actually help. So I can't wait to share everything.
And I can't wait to learn more. So I always like to learn about the journey, because we look at people and we go, you know what, Prisca's a success. You know, she's doing well. Life must have been easy for her. What led you to the point where you even made this discovery that it wasn't normal?
Yeah, so when I first had my first baby, I wanted to breastfeed. We all know breastfeeding is the best. That was my goal as a mother. And just like 80% of moms, I simply didn't have enough milk. So I had to supplement with baby bottles and formula, only to realize that my baby, almost immediately within a day, he stopped breastfeeding and he started to have a lot of issues like gas and colic. Crying all night, and eventually diagnosed with gastroesophageal reflux. So I wanted to learn more. I wanted to help them, did a lot of research online, and I found that the air introduction in the baby bottles caused his problems. So I was wondering, well, how about a baby bottle doesn't have any air, so he doesn't have to deal with it? So sure enough, there was nothing, right? All of them have an air vent. They introduce air. The bags contain air, retain air. It only mixes with the milk, and the baby swallows it, making it worse. So I created a device that actually works like a syringe with a cylinder and a plunger that we call air plug. This is essentially how you put it together. You put the milk in here and then you just simply cover it with a nipple. And then what you wanna do before you feed the baby is you wanna push that air plug to get rid of the air, just like syringes work. So the more you push, the more you see the milk going into the nipple and then expelling all the air, leaving your container without any air. And then as the baby feeds, that air plug moves automatically to dispense 100% air-free milk while the baby is in vertical upright position. And because the baby's feeding against gravity, he can control the flow and pace of feeding. So it took about 6.5 years to actually do the first market test. We launched nationwide in 185 baby Zarus stores in 2016. And we were kind of scouting for parental feedback to see, hey, how did you like it? How did you go? Did your baby like it? So what we learned from that test launch was that babies with diagnosed gastroesophageal reflux the parents were seeing the symptoms disappearing. Babies with extreme severe gas and colic issues, they were going from crying baby all day long to happy babies, soothing, no problem. So we wanted to take a closer look and learn even more. And we did a pilot clinical trial with Dr. Ramirez Coombs, who designed the study and run the study. And she concluded that 75% of babies no longer met the clinical criteria for gastroesophageal reflux disease, which is groundbreaking in this industry. So we want to look more into it, and we are partnering with a lot of hospitals here in New York, upstate New York, and the surrounding areas as well to do further studies to understand how can we help these babies with either simple GERD, which is gastroesophageal reflux, or gastroesophageal reflux disease. So there's a lot more to come. We're barely scratching the surface.
I'm impressed. I am completely impressed. Now, you said this was about a 6.5 year process for you to get here. Now, when you speak, it just sounds so simple. Like the baby has gas because of the air. Oh my God, let's fix it. That's kind of how moms like to do. But when you first, I mean, because babies, correct me if I'm wrong, but babies and bottles have been around for, you know, years. So it would have seemed that someone would have seen this problem. So when you went out and started this business or started the process of creating it, what did people say to you?
Well, it was actually very dramatic. So the technology is something that doesn't exist out there, as you may know. And I'm sure your listeners do know, most of the baby bottles have an air vent. And what that does is introduce air inside the bottle to relieve the negative vacuum buildup that babies cause with suction. So the bottles wanted to solve their problem, and they introduced an air vent, allowing a flow of air mixing in with the milk and feeding them with the to the baby, right? Then the plastic bags came out, which, you know, you can squeeze the air. So the air begins to sink into the industry. Something is wrong with the air introduction. We have to get rid of the air out. So I think that research has been out there. That's part of the research that I did, and I started to read more and more about it. But there isn't, or there wasn't, a device that completely eradicated air. So there wasn't much of research regarding of how much the air actually affects these babies. And so when we did the clinical study in 2017, and it proved that a true air-free device can minimize the symptoms enormously, that instigated actually a lot of doctors, and we answer a lot of their requests. They want to learn more. Doctors, nurses, they're always calling us to find out more, and it's the reason why we're moving with further clinical studies. Hasn't been easy? Absolutely not. It's been really a very interesting journey. I'm a designer by train. I went to Pratt Institute and have a master's degree in design. So I sat at my kitchen table every day for about 3.5 years to come up with a handmade prototype that, you know, I was testing, my husband was testing, anybody who could accept the babies, because, you know, the plastic, the materials weren't FDA approved, so you can't just, you know, I couldn't use it with my babies. But certainly it worked. I tried it. It worked. I used the breast pumps. I still have my breast pump that I, you know, demonstrate how this works every time we go to a trade show. And then that was the beginning of, now how are we going to manufacture this, which was another issue. The technology does not exist not in baby bottle industry or any other industry. The magic of this is that the plunger, the air plug, it's tight enough to hold a seal so the milk doesn't spill, but it's loose enough that it moves with baby suction. So that is, actually has a very intricate design that allows it to do both without having to fail. So it's been a challenge. We've talked to some of the most, the engineers that usually design this kind of devices, such as syringes and stuff. And they were like, I don't think it's going to work. I don't think, you know, one of the things that I always talk about is I'm sitting in front of a table with about 12 men As you know, the manufacturing industry is heavily manipulated by men. And I'm trying to explain to them how, you know, how breastfeeding works and what the baby is supposed to do while breastfeeding. And, you know, while it was a very uncomfortable conversation, you know, many of them were like, not in their heads, no, because they figure, you know, the baby doesn't have enough suction strength to move something that's feeling. So, you know, the only thing I could say to them is like, if you've ever breastfed a baby, you will know the powerful suction that these little babies have. And I think a lot of moms who breastfeed will agree with me. And, you know, we moved away from them, and I decided to take this into a manufacturing directly and oversee the manufacturing and test with them going back and forth via prototypes until the product did what I wanted it to do.
I'm impressed. That's all I have to say. I'm impressed. But Prisca, I'm going to come back to you. I want to introduce our next guest, Ms. Kimberly KP Lovejoy, transformation coach and founder of Lovejoy Co. Her aim is to change trends by equipping parents as the number one weapon for protecting little ones from the Pandora's box of predators, pedophiles, and porn. Sharing the overcoming stories of inspiring humans who've chosen to break up with porn for good and providing love, empathy, and tools to the beautiful ones who are stuck in the trenches. Good morning, KP. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. It's such an honor to be here, and I am humbled to follow Prisca. What an incredible story.
I would say the same thing. Thank you. Because I was just like, I saw you smiling and being supportive and naughty and kind of doing your own go Prisca cheer back there. What were your thoughts about what Prisca had to say?
Wow. I feel like we're kind of kindred spirits in the sense that we're both trying to protect children. And I think that it's really a different type of a journey, but we're both, you know, I believe God puts us all on this earth with superpower strengths that are creatively designed for each of us to walk out in our own way. And I think it's so beautiful to see, Sharifa and Prisca, how God's gifted you with these incredible ways to help heal our hurting humanity. It's really
absolutely
cool.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you. How are you helping to heal our hurting humanity?
Well, my goodness, right now it is such a critical time to be a parent. And I think, you know, my own personal journey, when many years ago, when I was 8 years old, I saw my first Playboy magazine, and it literally got its hook in my heart and pulled me right into a dangerous trap that led to a lifetime.
Okay, wait. Sometimes I cut in because I don't want to go in a different direction. How old were you?
Eight years old.
You were eight. And not to go too deep into your story, but wow, it would just seem like there, you know, that it shouldn't been around, and you shouldn't been open to that. So I'm sorry. I just want to clarify and confirm. Go ahead.
No, you're fine. And thank you for the question. It's actually a really good question, because today, a tremendous amount of research that shows how pornography is changing our sexual script shows that the average age of exposure is absolutely between 8 and 11 years old, depending on which study you look at. And it's definitely a different world when you have one of these. So we'll talk about that a little bit more, but my particular story, and we'll talk about brain science and we'll talk about how humans develop. But as an 8-year-old child, I had no reference for sex. I had no reference for anything about what is healthy, what is right, what all of this. And I didn't have a safe environment to go ask somebody. So pornography literally got its hook in my heart and pulled me into this dangerous trap that led to a lifetime of exploitation and abuse that almost ended in my death. And so what I decided is similar to Prisca. I said, okay, here's a problem. Doesn't look like a whole lot of people are stepping in front of the bullet to solve it. So I just basically said, let me Let me figure this out. And so
okay,
I went.
Before we solve it, I just got to chime in. I gotta ask some questions because I'm interested. And again, I try not to pry too much into people's stories. So forgive me. And if there's anything you don't want to share, please feel free to let me know. I didn't want to go past because of the point where you said it almost led to your death, because so many people are watching and they're listening and they may be going through the same thing. They may be having the same struggles. Mm-hmm. And again, not to be too specific, but when you say it almost led to your death, did you try to take your life or did someone else try to take your life?
I love that question. Thank you for clarifying. And I appreciate that. Both, actually. So through intimate partner violence, inspired by pornography, I was almost killed. And also, I was suicidal because I was exploited through partners that wanted to sell me. And now, as we know, timing is perfect. Today, we are celebrating National Slavery and Human Trafficking Prevention Month every January in the United States. Yes. And so what we are seeing is that this is a great time to ask questions and to understand more about what is human trafficking. I thought slavery ended, you know, and it's very much alive in what we call hidden in plain sight. So whether it's labor trafficking, whether it's sex trafficking, whether it's organ harvesting, whether it's, I mean, there's countless types, and I can share more about that. But for the purposes of this discussion, what I found is that pornography literally wrote my script of this is how you should act, this is how you should look, this is what the boys like, and if you want to be part of, you know, fitting in, which who doesn't want to fit in, this is exactly how you do it. And so I fell right into that trap. And so in actuality, my second book just came out and it is actually called A Dangerous Trap. And it is avoiding the bottomless pit of pornography. And it's really geared towards parents of tweens to talk to them about how do our brains absorb information, particularly sexual information. And then I've also written a book called Be Careful Little Eyes for younger kiddos, so that it talks more about how do we build an internal filter of how do we understand what we're seeing, what it is, what do I do with that? And who are the trusted adults that I can talk to about what I've seen? Because right now, the landscape right now is everybody being online, especially with the pandemic. Everybody's being online. Kids are learning online. And that environment is grooming ground for predators and pedophiles. And so what we're finding is that kids are online doing their homework or playing a video game or looking at a cartoon. And there's estimated by the FBI to be approximately 750,000 predators online at any given time. And there it's literally a hunting ground and they're looking for kids. How do I lure them and how do I groom them into nefarious activities such as child sexual abuse, pornography, human trafficking, and the list goes on. So I decided that I would use my story and I would say, hey, I know what happened to me and I know what could have stopped it. If I would have had trusted adults that I could have talked to about what was going on behind closed doors, what was going on, you know, in my own house, what was going on in my own relationships that I thought were love. And I didn't have that. So my number one goal is to empower parents to be that number one weapon in keeping our kiddos safe, because the landscape online is very dangerous right now.
Yes, absolutely. And I love it. I just love to be able to have a conversation. I know in previous generations, it was the theory that children are to be seen and not heard. And then when it got to be my generation, they said, oh, you guys are wrong. You always trying to be your kids' friends. You're trying to be your kids' friends. And I always felt that it wasn't that I was trying to be their friend per se, but I wanted to give them a safe harbor where they can speak to me and have a conversation. And my son's 24 now, but I always share the story when he was 21, he came to me and we had this long drawn out conversation and she's like, thanks, mom. Thank you for talking to me. And I was like, no, son, thank you for talking to me. You know, what kind of 21-year-old man wants to talk to his mom? It's usually so many other people that they'll take advice from and listen to. So that really made me feel good.
Absolutely. And you are, I mean, like you said, you're creating a safe environment for him to come talk to you. And so the intention of my books was, to start the ongoing conversation, because when I grew up, you know, there was the one time birds and the bees talk, and I didn't even get that. But most parents are still living in this world that, like, oh, my child would never look at pornography. My child is the exception. And I'm here to tell you that you may be the best parent in the world and you may be talking to your kids, but the opportunities abound in the relationships that they have, in the communities that they're a part of, you know, through scouts or through sports or through even just going to school, riding on a school bus. And media messages, you know, they're constantly inundated with sexual messages about this is how you should look, this is how you should act. You know, I've seen, I won't name names, but school-aged child clothing shops that advertise, you know, daddy's plaything and, you know, toy and things that are of a sexual nature. I've seen little girls in elementary school wearing Playboy bunnies on their t-shirts. And so it's really this idea of how are we changing the conversation so that we're countering the cultural narrative where the world wants kids to be sexualized at a younger and younger age, and we don't understand the ramifications of harmful content. Child sexual abuse is very real. Human trafficking is very real, and it's happening right in our own backyards, and we really need to open up our eyes and say, how do I stop this from happening in my community, in my family, in my home?
So take us, Kimberly, back to the day or the time frame in which you said, you know what, I have to do. Just like you said, Prisca said the same thing. I have to fix this. I have to do something mm-hmm. about it. When did you decide to make this your, I guess, your career, or your life's purpose?
Oh, thank you. I love that question because like many of us, I'm a slow learner. So my first job out of college, I was working for a nonprofit, and there was an interview. The head of our nonprofit did an interview with Ted Bundy right before he was executed. Oh, and wow. I don't know if any of you had seen this interview, and I would highly recommend watching it. But Ted Bundy, who raped, murdered, and very graphically tortured a lot of women. I don't remember the exact number, but it was a lot. Before he died, he talked about the root cause of what drove his behavior. And he said watching pornography had really normalized this depravity, that women were not human, that they were really sexual objects for his gratification. And what we know about brain science is, as I started studying, working in nonprofits, and then working for the federal government, I started learning more as I got my master's in human relations, and I learned about very key pieces of how our brains work, of human behavior, of how we connect, of how we find empathy and compassion, and that's all lacking in pornography. And so when we look at the trends of today's pornography, which is very, very different from the Playboy that I saw, you know, we call this porn in your pocket. You know, every kid that has a phone or a tablet or a gaming system has 24/7 access to an unending supply of what we know based on the research of, you know, as nearly as long as I've been alive, they've been doing studies about how pornography affects our brains, our bodies, and our relationships in our society. And what we see is the trends are violence, the trends are racism, the trends are dehumanization, et cetera, et cetera. And so all these things that we say in a civil society we don't tolerate, we see are completely given a pass in pornography. So for example, one particular meta-analysis that studied, I believe it was 46 different studies, they all confirmed that the trends in pornography, 88% of the top watched porn films contained violence. One in particular had over 100 instances of violence, particularly against females, in one video. And so kids whose brains aren't fully developed, what we call imprinting, or what we call script theory, or what we, you know, when we talk about how your brains form neural pathways, we're training our brains in our reward system that this is exciting and it gets something going in me that I don't fully understand, but I kind of like it, but it's terrifying at the same time. So kids are literally rewiring their brain to want to see more of this type of content. And when we see trends in school-aged children acting out, sexually harming other children, even during school days, we wonder what's going on. Well, if you start digging deeper, you find the root is typically pornography. They're acting out what they're seeing in pornography is that, you know, typically women like to be raped. Typically women like to be harmed, like to be called names, like to be racially degraded. And so I said, I have to do something because I started seeing in my work with the federal government, grown men were coming to me asking me, how do I change this? I don't like what I'm watching. I don't like what I'm doing. I'm terrified that I can't protect my kids because I'm looking at this too. And it's got its hook in my heart. And, you know, I had grown men who had really incredible careers and families who told me that they had destroyed their family. They had destroyed their career. They were suicidal because of what they were doing online when nobody was looking, and how they were dangerously close to losing everything. And I was the only one that was speaking out and talking to them about, here's what's going on. And they had never heard it before. Nobody had ever talked to them about it before, because we've kind of normalized that, you know, oh, it's harmless entertainment. And that's just couldn't be further from the truth.
Absolutely. Now, Prisca, you heard Kimberly's story, her journey. What are your thoughts?
Wow, I am just, it's incredible how you have come out of this horrible situation and actually made it not only gratifying to you, but helping, you know, other children. That is certainly, you know, any parent or anybody who's around children, I have two on my own. Yes, it's terrifying to hear this. And, you know, a lot of the misinformation that goes out there, not only from their peers, but as you say, they're exposed to the internet. You know, I think there's a lack of true information, a lack of education to children, that they, you know, it results on easily being influenced by other people. And, you know, I mean, not to minimize anything, because that is like very crazy and important, but it happens everywhere, right? We'll see that even in advertising, how it's a world of misinformation, and people get easily influenced, right? And they say, oh yeah, this is good. I'll buy it. I'll get it. And it's completely false. And we don't really have anybody who protects us, and let alone children, from that misinformation. So it's something, it's big within the individual issues that we're currently having today. And I wish that it gets addressed by a big institution such as perhaps the government or something, right? That needs to really look at these issues.
Yes, I've seen a person actually take almost like semi-naked woman and make her their advertising, and the woman had absolutely nothing to do with their product or service. I'm like, what does this have to do? Mm-hmm. It was like sex sales. And I'm like, okay, but you can't just throw a half naked woman out there and think people are going to buy from you. But in the world, that seems to be the model. Now, Prisca, in your business, I mean, you're working with babies and children. How do you make it just exciting and, you know, interesting in a world where sex sells?
Well, it's definitely, you know, challenging. I talk to my customer, that my information goes to the parent. The babies who are using my product are typically between 0 to 12 months. So the parents are going to be my listeners. And it all comes down to education once again. I mean, it's, you know, we have a technology that is very, very different than what has been out there, and therefore works in a different way and has different results, right? It seems that, believe it or not, I mean, we're such a small startup that has entirely influenced a whole industry and made them pivot to follow our trends. Before 2017, before 2016, if you may remember, baby bottles used to claim anti-gas, anti-colic. As soon as we came out with our clinical trials, that language switched to anti-reflux, and now everybody is air-free. And, you know, they're nothing but lies, right? So how does that influence the mom, the parents? They figure, well, this one says exactly the same thing as this one, therefore it must be the same. So educating them about what we do, what our technology is, and how different it is from, you know, the typical vented bottle that doesn't help. How is that going to actually make a difference in their baby's life? So it's educating a consumer, educating a group of people it's expensive, is time consuming. And, you know, we humans learn by repetition. So having a big marketing budget matters, because then how many times can you repeat it? How many times can you get to the same person with the same message so they understand? So that's, you know, that's another one of our challenges, that the big guys, you know, like the baby bottle industry is dominated by a handful of giants. So the fact that those giants have changed their wordings and their language to follow our trend from this tiny little startup that's mostly managed from my kitchen table, it's sad to me. It's sad because, you know, they have all the money in the world. Do something better for the children. Don't just, you know, try to change your language and confuse the consumer to get some sales, you know, like do something different. Here's the curve that's been lifted. Top it, do something better so that it actually helps the baby in a better way. And it's just so difficult to do. you know, it's about education. I think that's the key to all of these issues that we're currently having.
I like you. Have you ever taken no for an answer?
I haven't taken no for an answer.
I don't think so. Like, you're one of those perfect, like, I'm going to make it happen no matter what. You know, you're like that Aaron Brockovich. Like, this is going to change now.
Well, you know, my favorite quote is always, if you're not helping me, get out of my way, because I'm going to do this with or without you, right?
Exactly. You can tell. I think, Kimberly, you're like that as well. Kimberly?
Yes, and I'm so inspired by both of you, because I agree absolutely that you've actually changed the standard, and you may not even realize it, Prisca, but the fact that they've changed their language to follow you is calling them to a higher standard of accountability. And I think that that's the highest praise you'll ever find in the world. That's, like you said, it's dominated by a very small group of people, but they're learning from you. And I think that's absolutely the highest form of praise. And so I think you are absolutely blazing a new trail as a pioneer in the industry. And it's just a matter of time before that word of mouth campaign, because I don't necessarily think you have to have a huge marketing budget when you have a lot of moms who believe in what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. So Prisca, over the last year, how has it affected your small startup, as you call it?
Well, definitely, you know, the fact that these big corporations are claiming, you know, exactly what we're claiming today, it has hurt the business. People are confused. You know, when we do post on Facebook or other media platform, they're always compare us with the plastic bag baby bottles, or, you know, it's just like this brand. And again, it's the lack of education that I'm not getting through to them. It's a completely different technology. That's why it works. But we're, you know, we have come to above the line, and the competition is not catching up. They're just, you know, changing their language and hoping that they get some sales. Well, we're going to take it to the next step. We're relying a lot on scientific facts. We're doing a lot of clinical trials. We know that the pediatric institutions are paying more and more attention to what the norm was 5 years, 10 years ago. For example, prescription drugs are no longer recommended by the pediatric guidelines because they have been tied to horrible side effects. I mean, some of the ones, again, they didn't hear, let's see, Some of them, the prescription drugs usually lead to lethargic behavior, blood in the stool, liver disease, bone fracture, pneumonia, and necrotizing enterocolitis in preterm infants. Those are very, very serious side effects. And yet these prescription drugs have been used for so many years to treat gastroesophageal reflux. Most recently, the very common treatment, which is second in the formula, has also been tied to necrotizing enterocolitis. And so now the pediatric guidelines are preventing that for babies 2 months and younger. So, you know, what's coming down to is that there's really no effective solution for gastroesophageal reflux in this group of people. Every doctor I talk to, they agree that there's nothing. They don't give the doctors the proper tools to work with. So as a result, the parent gets affected, the child gets affected. There are multiple admissions to the emergency room, going back to the doctors. Parents are so desperate that they're even taking their babies to chiropractors, believe it or not. They're giving their babies probiotics or anything that claims, you know, anti-reflux, because there's nothing that actually helps. When you look in the FDA, the only thing that's approved for infants with gastroesophageal reflux are prescription drugs. And I just read the whole list of side effects that these causes, right? So there is really nothing safe, nothing that's effective. And so what we're trying to do, our first clinical trial was based on parental feedback. So what we're trying to do now is involving the doctor so we can have doctor assessments, and then they can look at the baby and do their test and actually see how much it helps with their regurgitation and, you know, acid episodes that the baby typically have. There's a lot more.
I mean, there's a lot more that goes into it. And specifically, that was a wonderful answer. I loved it. Specifically, why I asked the question is most business owners have seen some type of change in their business over the last year, with more people searching online, you know, for ways to help their baby, but also more people who do not want to take, especially their infant, into a hospital or into a doctor right now. If you saw an increase in parents, you know, coming to you.
Yes, we definitely have. There are a lot of questions. There are a lot of, you know, people are not used to reading about clinical trials for a baby bottle. So we're trying to, you know, lift that behavior and say, listen, baby bottles, okay, you can have your thought about baby bottles and keep it on the side. This is a product that actually is going to help with your baby if your baby has gastroesophageal reflux or symptoms related to feeding. So if they, you know, we change the packaging from baby bottles to feeding system for that same reason, because we don't fall in the baby bottle category. You know, baby bottles are a very basic kind of job. They feed the baby, period. But along with that, there are a lot of issues that can be prevented if you use something else, such as a feeding device, like, you know, like this one. And you know, baby bottles do not spend any, their marketing is spent somewhere else. They're not really doing the studies that they're supposed to. There is no any clinical evidence in that kind of consumer product. So we're lifting the category, and we are creating something that's more elevated that actually helps those babies. People are reading a lot more online, and we have, every time we write a blog post, we cite previous clinical trials, and you can clearly see, you know, feeding a baby with a device that closes the baby in a horizontal position is clinically proven that it's bad for the baby. It actually worsens acid reflux, right? So that's another trend that we studied too. You want to sit the baby 100% upright, vertical upright position, just like you and I drink coffee, and feed the baby with face sit down, because this product feeds against gravity. So you don't have to do this, right? So that's also something that has influenced the major brands. They actually have the babies, you know, Photoshop where they're holding the baby bottle like this, and they're like the milk suddenly goes up to the top and feeds the baby. I mean, it's just laughable.
You're looking at all the competition. Prisca's out there noticing, watching. No, Kimberly, Prisca mentioned her post in social media. How do you get your message out about your cause?
Well, I am actually not really big on social media, but I do a lot of keynote speaking engagements. And so I engage in storytelling where I invite the audience in to the story. Because I think a lot of times, just like with Prisca and with you, when we engage in a story, we find empathy and we find connection pieces and we find points. I don't know if you're familiar with Brené Brown's talks about authenticity and vulnerability, but when we become vulnerable and we share maybe the chinks in our armor or the struggles that we've gone through and overcome, other people feel a connection and they feel an opportunity to build a trusted relationship. And so, I mean, just this week I've had two different fathers reach out to me because they're concerned about their children being groomed online for sex trafficking. And if they didn't feel that trusted connection, they wouldn't have reached out. And so I had a young boy, I recently shared about a story of a 13-year-old boy that was groomed by a trafficker online. I believe it was through TikTok. And his child sexual abuse material, which is his nude images, were created into a video that this was essentially, they were trading images back and forth. And they kept telling him, if you don't send more, we're going to harm you, we're going to post them to your whole school, et cetera, et cetera. And so they eventually found their way onto Twitter, which is quite common, and Twitter refused to take them down. And so I was sharing this story, and this boy came forward to tell me the same thing happened to him. And we often think, you know, usually it's girls and women that are being sexually exploited, but the number of boys and men that are being trafficked and exploited for sexual gratification of predators and pedophiles is alarming. And so to be able to share my story invites the others to come forward and share their story. And to be able to talk about, like, this young boy was suicidal because he knew that his images had gotten out in his school. He was being bullied incessantly. And still in this particular case that just went, they're actually being sued, Twitter's being sued right now because they refused to take the images down. They said it didn't violate their terms of service. And the mom repeatedly reached out to Twitter saying, this is my 13-year-old child and this is child sexual abuse material. And so when Prisca was talking about the battle against the technology, I battled technology in a different world because all of these platforms, and I won't name names to say if you use them on a daily basis, there is child sexual abuse material and trafficking happening on them. And they literally turn a blind eye and they have protection under what's called Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, which was written in 1996, long before we had cell phones that were of the scale and we had technology that we have today and the problems that we have today with trafficking and child sexual abuse material. So raising the red flag, and I think Prisca beautifully stated it, we have to not just look at it as an individual level, but there's something called the social ecological model that talks about, yes, as the individual, but also expand out to the relationship, expand out to the community, and expand out to the society. So what kind of public policy laws and standards do we have in place that say we're not okay with this? And if we have federal laws that say, well, you know, these internet service providers are protected and they have near blanket immunity from this type of material being posted on the Facebooks, the Googles, the Amazons, the Twitters, Instagram, et cetera, what can you do when they literally have 100% immunity and there's nothing you can do except keep asking and keep calling and say, hey, we're going to sue you, which was finally what this 13-year-old boy finally did. And it was just publicized yesterday. National Center on Sexual Exploitation is suing Twitter on behalf of this child who I think his videos were shared up to 200,000 times. That doesn't even count how many times people screenshotted it, downloaded it, traded amongst pedophile networks. And now this boy has to live with that for the rest of his life. And Twitter says, yeah, nothing to see here. So I get this righteous indignation, much like Prisco was talking about, of fighting against the lie that says, no, this is okay. Or in Prisca's case, this is the same thing. It's not the same thing. And until somebody stands up and is willing to be that lone voice crying in the wilderness and saying, like, I don't care if I'm the only one. I don't care if you hate me because I'm saying something that's uncomfortable. I have to do this because children's lives are at stake.
Wow, I love your passion, KP. And I will say this, and I will state this for a fact, it's just a matter of time, because we as a people have been cleaning up our society, especially when we have new legislation. Back pages completely shut down. So I see that as a step forward. Craigslist used to have a dating and a personal section of their website. And then there started to be legislation that would have held Craigslist responsible for any human sex trafficking that happened when people met through Craigslist. Craigslist said, you know what, we're not going for it. And they shut down all their personal section of the website. I'm sure you were familiar with those two, Kimberly.
Yes. In fact, Section 230, which I mentioned, was instrumental in protecting Backpage. So when FOSTA-SESTA was passed, and that was a law against empowering sex trafficking online, they hid behind the Section 230, which is the exact same thing that Twitter and Facebook and Google are hiding behind today. I mean, you can go to Amazon right now and buy child sex dolls. You can buy books about how to groom kids into trafficking on Amazon. And so when we see that and we say, we're not okay with this, regardless of your political affiliation, right now there's a huge battle against Section 230 particularly because of online censorship, but it also covers down on the exploitation of children that is happening with literally no accountability to these tech giants, because they can literally protect themselves because of that law. So we're working on legislation right now that's called the Earn It Act. And it's really beautiful because it's basically about protecting children online and creating a council that will literally look at how do we, in the digital world that we live in, how do we protect children online? And it was absolutely the most beautiful thing when it was introduced in the Senate Judiciary Committee last year. We had the very, very conservative and the very, very liberal working together hand in hand, and 22-0 in the Senate Judiciary Committee, Earn It Act was passed, because every single one, regardless of whether they were a D or an R, said, we are not okay with this and we must protect our children. So of course, big tech came and said, no, this will destroy the internet with their millions and billions of dollars of lobbying money. And there's the moms and the dads that are saying, no, we're not okay with this. And we're standing up for our kids and we want to protect our kids. So it's coming back. We're bringing it back before Congress this year, because it is literally appalling how common, how prevalent it is. And I could tell you story after story, just like this 13-year-old boy, of kids that are being exploited every day with no repercussions for tech.
So let me just ask you and go in a different direction for a little bit. Yeah. One of the things that I heard you say was you're not big on social media. Now, I personally made a post, a little meme that I shared on social media, I shared on my group, which literally said, shout out to the entrepreneurs who would love to close their social media, but can't because they're in business. So how is it for, you know, how do you manage and operate and grow and have people reach out to you and connect with you if you're not big on social media?
Well, I mentioned about Prisca, I think word of mouth is the highest praise. When somebody believes in what you're doing and then they tell their network, and certainly it's not like this post went viral and there's millions of people who saw it, but it's a different kind of impact. And to me, it's a more personal and more powerful type of impact, because I was on social media and I saw the adrenaline of, you know, and there are actually studies about this, and Senate Judiciary Committee held a hearing about tech and about how it is literally like a, I forget what the phenomenon is called, but if you've ever been to a slot machine and, you know, you pull the lever, that adrenaline rush that we get is exactly what they do on social media when you scroll to refresh your feed to see how many people like me, how many people affirm me, how many people think I'm doing good things. And that is contagious. And it's just that same reward system that pornography works into in our brains, that we feed off of that. And we see that kids are really, really responding to this. And there's a fabulous documentary called Childhood 2.0 that talks about this. And it's just been released within the last couple of months. And it talks about how kids' brains are attracted to that addictive element of feed me, affirm me, tell me I'm pretty, tell me I'm worthy, tell me I'm loved, tell me my products are worth buying. And so I broke up with that because I said, that's not who I am. I'm not gonna preach one message and tell, you know, myself a totally different standard. So I try to preach what I practice in real life. And I try to hold myself to the same standard that I hold my clients too, and saying this isn't healthy, and to me it's worth the you know, maybe it'll take me longer to grow because I don't do that, but it's definitely worth it for my own mental health.
No, I get it, but what about the people such as myself who without it, you know, I wouldn't be able to meet new people or meet new guests? So I mean, I guess there has to be some type of in between. You know, Prisca uses it for her business. Maybe it's a new another discussion, because we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching the show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Prisca.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Sharifa. I share what Kimberly is saying, and it's kind of like what I'm saying as well. Learn the facts, educate yourself so you can make intelligent decisions and you can raise your children. Yes, the world is a mess, but there are always parents, right? That their job is to protect their children. And you do what you can, and there are tools out there to limit the internet while you're at home. There are tools out there. I mean, Apple is becoming really, really great at giving parents the tools to essentially block a lot of the things that are happening on the internet, and the children have access to the phone. My kids are now 12 and 13, so I'm right around that age that it gets a little tricky. And, you know, keeping the children busy with sports or some of the, you know, there's all things that people used to do before the internet that actually keeps them distracted. You know, same thing to my customers, learn the facts. You know, if you read something, you it's about protecting your baby. You have this little tiny baby that can't speak to you, that can't tell you anything. Your job is to protect them and give them the best that you can, right, within your means. So just giving them something because, oh, somebody gave it to you for free, or, you know, or because because it's just, you know, what my mother used to use. Things are changing. What the FDA approved several years ago are now being banned. I mean, one of the things, like, I mean, not to go back to the same thing, but Zantac, for example, was approved and one of the most common prescription drugs for babies with gastroesophageal reflux. In 2019, the FDA banned Zantac off the shelf because they found cancer-causing ingredients in their list. I mean, things do change, so it's not always the same thing of what grandma used to do, right? So read, educate yourself, and most importantly, make the best decision that you can possibly can with the tools that you have at the time. I mean, that's what it should be. We all make mistakes. We all make bad decisions, but we can all correct our mistakes, right? And correct and change our decisions based on the facts.
Absolutely. Thank you, Prisca. Kimberly, what do you have for us?
Oh, I love that. That's such a good way to follow. I'm so excited about what y'all are doing. I would say that just like Prisca, I think education is the key. And what I've found is that the more we know, the more we understand the world that we're living in. You know, I was really excited to launch my porn-free effort last year. And just as my first book came out, I had this amazing vision of giving away 2020 so that parents could have 2020 vision and how to protect their kids. And then China virus. And I decided that this was actually going to be a bigger initiative for me. And so I decided that until there were no more kids being sexually exploited, I was going to give away my books and just ask for the shipping and the handling to be covered. So if you have a child under the age of 8, be careful, little eyes. If you have a child that is a tween, a dangerous trap, and this goes into more of my story. And I just think that, again, you know, kids love to connect with other kids. And so as they follow me into the dangerous trap and they understand how our brains work, it's all about building this internal filter, because you cannot be with your children 24/7. And even if you're the best parent in the world, you can't protect them from every danger that's lurking online. So what I'm super excited about, just like Prisca, is the more you educate and empower your kids to think about what they're seeing and how to respond and who to talk to, the more that you're building these protective walls of resilience that are going to help them, whether they're stuck, whether they are overcoming. And I have a ton of resources on my website, which is pfco.today. And it'll take you to the links to get these books. And like I said, they're free. I just ask for the shipping and handling to be covered. So that is my shout out to parents. You are the number one weapon in keeping your kids safe. And I love you and I support you and I'm here for you no matter where you are.
I think that was today's message. Parents are the number one weapon against keeping your kids safe. I think that was wonderful. I love this show. I want to thank you both for being guests on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live, as well as everyone who is watching in the archives. I definitely appreciate your support. I appreciate you watching. I appreciate you sharing. But as always, please don't just watch the show. Please don't just share the show. Support our guests. Visit their websites. The website link is in the Facebook post. Check them out. Follow them on social media. If you have questions, ask. When you reach out to them, please let them know. Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at asksharifa.com. Until Monday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, everyone have a safe and a blessed weekend. Bye now.